Oh, hey, Brian.
Hey, Rory. How's it going?
What's up, man?
Okay, awesome.
Aha. Good morning, bro. How's it going?
Yo, what's up, man?
You good?
Good to see you, man.
Come on up.
Okay.
Afternoon.
Nice. The top?
Yep.
Sweet.
You probably want to do this inside the podcast, because as nice as it is outside, it'd be so slow. No sooner do we start, and there'll be some
exactly.
Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw.
Oh, photography, what does it mean to me? I don't know, in some ways a lot, not a lot. I remember at uni I did a module. It was just like a, what do you call it? One of the little optional ones you do at the end, just to sort of fill the space. So it was fun just goofing around, but I don't know. Not a lot. I mean, I was never really a photographer, but it's just fun. It's a cool medium, but it doesn't like have a meaning to me. Yeah, I didn't sort of study what I studied to do the photography.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it. Easy.
Yeah.
So, Rory, is it Mackay? How do you say your last name?
Mackay,
of course.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Rory Mackay. Thank you for letting me come to your house. It's in a state of transition, as you are.
Yes, life's in a state of flux at the moment. When isn't it, I suppose? But yeah, at the moment, perhaps a little more than past times.
Yeah. And so just to give the listener some background. So we are in a village called Nam Wai, which is in Sai Kung, which is in Hong Kong. And the reason we met was because you needed some extra support, help, whatever, on these adventure tours that you're giving. You kindly let me join. Basically, watch kids fall on their heads on the bicycles and kayaking. And just from talking to you over a lunch break one time, I was just like, okay, shut up. You have to be on my podcast. You're amazing.
Thank you.
And my job is to make you blush.
Yeah, well, you're succeeding already. Too bad it's just audio.
No, it's all
we'll never
good.
Really know.
It's all good.
You were all right on the tours. You were good. Yeah. Yeah, the cycling is terrible. We were picking up a lot of scraps with those kids. It's not really what we do most days.
All but. Good, man. So thank you so much. The podcast is about, you know, life is a gift, how to make every second count. Just from your stories, and I have no idea what you sent as photos, like how you're going to shape, but you're a guy who has bonkers stories, but let me open the photo and let's start with
okay
first. That's how it works. So about 15 minutes per photo.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Easy peasy. All you have to do is talk about them.
And you haven't seen them yet?
No, I only look once I'm with a person.
They weren't in any particular order, but let's just see how they come out.
Yeah, let's just see. So where's your
bottom
Roy?
Yeah. It has come out in an order because I mentioned just before we started recording.
Yeah,
I found it interesting to myself. I didn't give too much angst towards what photos do I pick and do I want to curate it or anything like that.
Well, if we wanted,
but this was the one photo that I knew I wanted to pick before the other three.
Okay.
Use it by a distance. As soon as you talked about photos, I was like, this one.
Okay, we'll start with this one. So
this was the one that came into my head first. And it's not necessarily this photo that it was taken at a particular time of day or a particular person.
Yeah.
It's more just the scene. So I really just went to Google and just said K2.
Okay.
So we've got the mountain K2.
Okay.
But it's the most iconic. If you Google it,
this isn't the photo you made?
No. I just took it off the internet.
Okay.
But
okay.
It's the most, if you Google K2, nearly every photo will be this aspect of the mountain.
Right.
From the base camp up on the Baltoro Glacier. There are some which I find a bit more dramatic. They're further down the glacier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the ultimate mountain for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So here's the, it's hard to describe, it's a podcast about photographs. It's ridiculous. So basically, it's a photograph made at the base camp. You can see a couple of tents, I guess, and a couple, you know, in this sort of fluorescent orange or whatever at the bottom. There's no vegetation. So it's just exposed earth shot on a clear day, probably in the either a couple of hours into the afternoon or late morning. Because of the light direction and the shadows, you see the. Now you're a geography nerd, so of course you'll know your figure. I love the fact that whoever shot this used a polarizing filter, so the sky isn't light blue; it's this dark, dark, dark navy. Super, you know, it's at altitude; it's full on. K2, tallest peak, second tallest in the world.
The
hardest.
Yeah, many people's books are hardest. I don't know. I'd use words like gnarly, just epic.
Yeah.
If I think if a kid, without knowing of K2, say to a kid, draw a mountain, snow-capped peak.
Yeah.
This is it. It's just
there. You go.
Sheer pyramid of.
I love that there's just the barest hint of a cloud condensation.
Yeah, a little lenticular.
Just sitting at the peak. Okay, then the first question I have to ask you, and by the way, my questions aren't questions. I talk and then I say, what do you think? So in this case, it's a question.
Okay.
Why?
Most epic mountain. And although I'm not a mountaineer per se, or I didn't sort of grow up necessarily in mountains all the time, just wherever I go in the world, if there are hills or mountains, I find those places alluring, interesting, and as someone who's now basically making my living out of adventure tour guiding, mountains are where it's at. Right. I mean, I don't necessarily ever want to climb that thing because I might die trying. I don't know. I'm just it would be a real privilege to go to Kashmir one day and see the thing. Mm-hmm. But most epic mountain. It's always captured my imagination.
Okay, so because you dropped that bomb, dropped that hint, flag, you have a company that does, and that's how I met you, that does adventure tours.
Mm-hmm.
Sell it. What's it called?
Wild Hong Kong. Wow. So we don't necessarily get that wild with all the customers, as we just hinted on with the kids we took cycling.
Mm-hmm,
A lot of people struggling just to put one foot in front of the other, literally. But we try to challenge them within reason. But it's an adventure tour company. Started it 10 years or so ago now.
Amazing.
And it was born out of latter years at school and then years after school, university, whatnot. I think discovering through those years that this is probably one of my main passions in life was outdoor adventuring, as opposed to my degree, which was in architecture.
But architecture, not geography.
Architecture. If I was ever to do a master's, something like cartography could be of interest, because as you've noticed when we were doing tours, I was a bit of a map geek. I'm a geographer. That's my, because I think it's interesting with all the staff we have on the company, they all have different, not so much strengths or weaknesses as guides, but things that they find interesting. Mm-hmm. For example, you've met Tristan.
Yep.
He's my main guide who works for me full time. He's not so much a geographer, and he's a biologist, but I'd say it's the marine biology that interests him the most. Mm-hmm. He loves to do Hoi Ha, is his favorite tour. Yep. It's this little cove in Hong Kong that has coral and good marine biodiversity, and he loves putting jellyfish out. You know, I find it interesting, but I'm not that bothered. And to the same end, he's not an ornithologist. Yeah. He doesn't give a stuff about what bushes are lurking about. For me, my aspect is I'm a geographer. I love pointing out that's that hill, that's that island. This is how these rocks are formed, whatever it may be.
Right.
It's not specifically geology or just landscapes, maps, navigation. Yeah, I dig it. So that's something I try to push to the table when I'm with a guest on a tour.
Right. So what's the tallest elevation you'll take your guests here in Hong Kong?
Nice. As much as you can get. You can't even, the highest hill in Hong Kong, Tai Mo Shan, I think it's 954 meters, mm-hmm. but you can't get to the top because there's a POA
yep.
base. The road kind of gets to a gate for mm-hmm. basketball courts. It's rather underwhelming. The hell is the top? So I don't even know what altitude that's at. Because Dantao Peak's 932 or 934. Mm-hmm. So that actually might still be the highest.
Mm. I think Tai Mo Shan is academically the highest, but the highest you can get to is probably Lantau.
And it's befitting because Lantau Peak is an epic...
beautiful place.
I would say epic hill, but it's one of these hills that feels and looks like a big mountain.
Yep.
You put that next to mountains in other parts of the world, it's a little lump, but mm-hmm. it is epic.
Yep.
And it's got a... because people sometimes will ask, what's a mountain? Right, what's a hill? What's a mountain? It's different where you are in the world.
But sure.
Yeah, I'd say Lantau Peak goes in the mountain category.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever, or shall I say, how many people have you brought up Lantau who broke down crying?
Just the two.
Oh,
only
two?
Only made two girls cry.
What?
On Lantau Peak.
How can I have beat your record? That doesn't make sense.
We with a group? How did you make your girls cry? I'm allowed to throw questions back at you, right?
One was a man, two were women, who just get to the top. You know, there's that false peak. You know, mm-hmm. there's the first ridge that you kind of...
You going from the southern side?
Yeah, from the south.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then, yeah, if you go straight up from the Big Buddha, it's just up. And
a lot of people find those stone steps to get to the ridge.
Yeah.
Quite demoralizing.
Yeah. Well, so, but if you go from the saddle... it's usually that when you crowd, like you have all these mini peaks and you get to one of the false ones, usually there, somebody who's not used to walking, not used to hiking, whatever. It's just their body saying, I'm going to cry now.
The two times we've done it, we're both at, we ascended at night for sunrise. So it was a case of, as it gets light, they start to see what we've dragged them up, and then they freak out, cry, want to go back down. But this is like out of hundreds of people.
Sure.
But it's one of the more like wild tours we get to do.
Yeah. It's a great one. Yeah, like, okay, so the image you serve up is of K2, which is, as far as the world is concerned, arguably one of the most difficult peaks.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say has been your most difficult peak?
The hardest mountain I've ever climbed. Don't know. I think maybe some of the stuff we had to do at school when I was a teenager, like a young teenager, like 13. Not because the mountain itself was technical, just the experience of having to go up there was bloody miserable and I wasn't wanting to do it. Mm-hmm. We had to go up.
Mm-hmm.
So the boarding school, I went to boarding school in Scotland for 10 years as a teenager.
Okay.
And the school has a very strong outdoor ethos. So every term there would be an exped, so we just abbreviate it from expedition to exped.
Mm-hmm.
Some were like a house expedition where it's quite a laugh. You're just going with all the different age groups in your house and you just do games and activities and goof about. But you would have your year 9, your year 10, your year 11, so on. Annual exped, and it would be not in the winter, but usually in the shoulder season, in the autumn or the spring. If you've been to Scotland, it's still bloody wet and cold the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's not fun. And we'd be dragged up on a predetermined date. Invariably, the weather is
shit.
Shite. Dreek, as they say in Scotland.
Dreek.
Aye, it was dreek.
You can totally swear if you want
to. I can fucking swear, right? Because that's a large part of the Scottish accent if you're going to put it on. Yeah, it'll just be windy and wet and you're not having fun. Like, we don't do the exped to climb the mountain. We'll be on some four-day plod, generally through valleys and peat bog. Your shoes are already wet and you have blisters and then you have to go up the summit and it's just fog. Nothing to see.
Yeah.
You're just like, what are we doing up here? Like,
that's demoralizing, to climb up a mountain or a peak or whatever, that you're in fog the whole time. You're just like, well, I have no frame of reference. I'm just ruling up.
They call it character building. I mean, maybe it's made later on, it's rubbed off on me. I'm not so sure sometimes because it kind of almost put me off a lot of outdoor pursuits as a teenager.
Hold on. I have to disagree. Because you did this shit. It's really awful. Character building, all that stuff.
It's cliche, and, but it's true.
But it did not put you off, because what are you doing for a living?
Well, this would take me to my next point.
Yeah.
Would be that it introduced me to the sphere of it, yeah. But in the short term, it did put me off. I mean, yeah, it did rub off on me, of course, but it was something I don't want to give school too much credit for, because I had to really discover it after school.
Right.
Doing adventures that I wanted to do,
yeah.
Maybe when I wanted to do them.
For sure.
And
okay.
that was the fun. Amazing. Not being sent off.
No.
And I wasn't going to join the military.
Right.
Boarding school definitely
right.
told me that was the path I didn't want to take. I enjoy a bit of freedom.
Right, and I got that. Boom, okay.
Takes us nicely on, really, from what I was just saying. Okay. Discovering adventure on my own terms, and as an expression of real freedom.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a photo. It's shot on a grey, overcast day.
In Scotland.
It's in Scotland.
This is in Scotland.
Okay. This is you on the left in the black?
It's a photo of me and my father with our bicycles.
Bicycles.
At John O'Groats, which is... It's not actually the most northern, but it's at the north. It's the northern end of the UK.
Right.
So, it's famous in the UK for people to do cycling or running or walking or unicycling, you name it. Yeah. There's a charity raising thing often to cycle from Land's End to John O'Groats. You're essentially going from one end of the British Isles or the island of Great Britain to the
How
other.
How many kilometers that way?
Don't know. I've never done it.
Well, it says, okay, so the sign says Cairo 3,000 meters. What?
Miles.
Okay.
Land's End is 87 something miles perhaps.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah, so the original sign, this is photoshopped.
Oh, okay.
The original sign doesn't have Cairo or Cape Town on it, but I've added it in.
Oh, okay. So there's one that says New York, Cape Town, Cairo, Land's End. And then that's you, and that's your dad.
And my father. So
he's in jeans. I guess it was windy.
Some corduroy trousers. That's just his style.
Trousers.
He's a bit naff, but
yeah.
No. Yeah, with his high vis yellow jacket.
Well, the apple didn't fall far from the tree, man. Like, okay.
So the Cairo and Cape Town are photoshopped in because this was culminating the end of a journey from those places.
Right.
So I felt with this podcast, yeah, I've got to mention the Africa trip I did because it's
crazy.
It's a note. There's plenty to talk about.
Yes.
And it's a noteworthy thing I've done in my life and shaped a lot of things. So going back to what I was mentioning 5 minutes ago with discovering adventure on my own terms, leading me to start an adventure tour company. This trip was an integral part of that. Mm-hmm. So I cycled, not every kilometer, but I cycled about two-thirds of it. Mm-hmm. But I went with my bike from Cape Town to Cairo overland across Africa.
Mm. Say that again. Just say that.
I went slowly. I cycled basically from Cape Town to Cairo across Africa.
Right.
And then when I got to Cairo, I wasn't doing the trip with a very strict plan in mind of I'm going to cycle every bit of it, or it was initially let's just get to Nairobi and see if I'm alive. I was. So then I got to Cairo and I felt I'd bitten off an appropriate amount to chew. When I got to Cairo, I thought I've crossed Africa, kind of out of money. So rather than having to fundraise or borrow for the sake of cycling from Cairo onwards to Scotland to do this Cape to Cape, I flew to Edinburgh. And as a little bit of a cherry on top of the cake kind of thing, I cycled from Edinburgh up to John O'Groats. It was about 6 days. It was six leisurely days of cycling because the last three, my father joined me and we rode up. So it was It was nice to finish to do the last bit of the last leg with him to culminate this awesome adventure.
Was it did you leave with one bike and end with one bike? Or did you get different bikes?
It was one bike.
Wow.
The plan was originally to do an overland trip by four-wheel drive.
Right.
So I've been studying in Australia my architecture degree for 5 years. And then the last 6 months before I left Australia, I'd graduated and planned with a friend to do Trans-Africa in like a Land Cruiser or Land Rover Defender, something like this. And just as I'm within weeks of me going to Africa to get my flight, he says, oh, I want to put the event back by a year.
Yeah, so he hit the brakes and you're like, wait. Well, he's
working as a geologist in Australia and said, I want to, you know, secure more money and whatnot. But I was already committed. I basically left Australia, sold all my stuff. Like I was...
Right.
I was going to Scotland for a fortnight over Christmas to see my family before flying down to Cape Town. Mm. So I just said, fuck you, basically.
So you went to South Africa.
So...
Okay, now had you been?
No, I'd never been to Africa before.
Oh, amazing.
So pretty ad hoc, got to Scotland over that Christmas. Had to figure out very quickly, what do I want to do? If I'm not going to wait a year, do I go down to Africa, just mooch about, maybe wait a year down there doing something else? Do I just backpack around, bumble about? Do I still try to go Trans-Africa? If so, I don't have the money to do it in a car.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough to pitch in my share, but I was relying on him to buy the thing,
right.
Cover certain overheads. So I'd done a cycling trip a few years before across Vietnam and China, and it was one of the best ways to really travel and get to know a place.
Yep.
So I thought, well, yeah, that could work. Let's do it. Wow. So I went to the garage. So the bike that's in the photo, the one bike that made it across, was a pretty shitty old hardtail mountain bike that I'd had for 4 years already. I got it when I was a teenager.
Mm.
It was a relatively cheap bike from a shop called Halfords in the UK, which is predominantly known for buying car parts.
Okay.
But they do sell a few bicycles. It's not a bike shop.
That's great.
So I stuck it in a box, put the box on a skateboard, and got to Edinburgh with it, got on a flight and flew the thing to Africa, and then tried to sort of... I had about 4 weeks in South Africa, not cycling, just traveling around, experiencing it, seeing some friends and getting what advice I could and preparing there. Mm-hmm. So I got all my vaccinations done there. I got saddlebags and some bits of kit set up. But pretty much everyone just said, you're mad, don't do it.
I'm going to cycle along the coast, right?
Little of these South Africans, oh, the idea, well, man, you can do it for a bit, but once you get to this country, they'll kill you, blah, blah, blah.
But again, so you went along, you snaked along the coast, or did you go through the interior?
Once I started, I initially went up the west side until I got to Namibia, then go inland through Botswana, Zambia, Malawi, and then I hit the east. I didn't hit the Indian Ocean coast until Dar es Salaam in Tanzania.
Okay.
But then you sort of bound to some extent on a bicycle to keep east, go through Kenya, Sudan, Egypt, because people ask, how do you pick the route? You either kind of go west or east.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a lot of your options are... Like, I'm not going to go cycling through Chad. I'm sure you could.
Mm.
Somalia, Mozambique, there was a civil war at the time. The Congo is mental.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the route chooses itself.
Yeah.
People will go straight north through Zimbabwe first.
Mm-hmm.
So I found in Zambia, I'd meet a few people who'd gone up. And then in East Africa, I didn't go to Rwanda or Uganda, which would have been cool. Mm. But...
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have a plan to cycle every K, so I hitchhiked a fair bit. And
one of the things that is... Okay, so because you've experienced it, and I think by bike, it's like walking. By car, it happens by very quickly. Just like in a plane, it happens instantaneously. But when you're cycling, it's all about speed, right? So it's like maybe if you went by wheelchair... It's kind of like, or skateboard is like the slowest sort of vehicle to kind of get across a distance. Walking, pretty good, you know, but then like cycling for me, is so meditative. Like you're in your head and you're just pushing the kilometers. And it's a really great way of intimately feeling the landscape.
Yeah, I think there's a clear distinction to that end between like a car and any other vehicle, even a motorbike to some extent, because with the car, you're in a bubble and you're insulated. The motorbike was quite a lot of faff. I met a lot of people motorbiking across Africa, and I don't know, it was quite dodgy. There was just a lot of faff crossing borders and things. Mm-hmm. Like, I basically, other than a couple occasions, never had to pay a bribe at a checkpoint on a bicycle. The guys would just wave you through.
Right.
If you're on a motor vehicle, they would want back sheesh.
They probably see some weirdo biking by and they're like, this guy has to be local because where the fuck is he coming from?
Yeah, a lot of Africans will also be just hoofing about on bikes, especially in Zambia and Malawi. Mm-hmm. Loads of locals would cycle there. And yeah, they have a measure of respect, I suppose, because you're doing it on a bike. But then the other side, you're talking about the meditative state of mind. I think that could apply to people that...
driving long distances.
You could be cycling, you could be running it, walking it.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's bloody pogo sticked across Africa. You know, and that would apply to all of them. The distinction with cycling, apart from those other exposed modes, would be you can cover decent distance each day. Like, your distance is tangible.
Yeah.
Like, if you cycle 100 kilometers, hypothetically, in some parts of the world, you could start your day in a semi-desert, go over a mountain range, and be somewhere verdant by the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your distance is tangible. I had a South African-made Africa Road Atlas A4, and that was my map to get me across. I didn't have lots of little fold-out maps or different things along the way. I would exchange Lonely Planet books with people, had some maps. And even then, if you're doing about 100 kilometers a day, your progress on the map is just a little...
Yeah,
that was, for me, a good balance. There's some people that will dig the more arduous progress of doing it by foot.
Less distance per day. Different stroke. I mean, personally, I gravitate to cycling. I love to cycle. For me, it's so many good things. And then when you said that you went by bicycle from South Africa to Cairo, and you went from the south to the north in Egypt. Like, okay, so which country was physically the most demanding?
Sudan.
Sudan, okay.
Sudan was the most demanding in every way.
Okay.
There's no tourism there.
Okay.
It's bloody hot,
right,
regardless of when you go, really. The accommodation's pretty scant.
Yeah.
The distances between anything are huge.
Oh.
Just inhospitable. A lot of admin. You can't just pop in. You gotta sort out your visas and whatnot in advance. And once you're there, it's very hard to get cash. Mm. Just a lot of things that don't feed in very well for a cycling trip. And you're coming across from a rural part of Ethiopia, so you're not really entering Sudan full of beans.
Yeah, on a good...
And fully, I was pretty knackered just crossing the border already. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty challenging. And then I got sick when I was there, so yeah, that...
How many times did you get sick?
Only once, like, quite properly.
Like, hospitalized sick?
I went to the hospital and they gave me, like, some sort of IV type injection thing because I thought I had malaria. So I went to get a blood test.
Right.
But the place was mayhem. I was very much better off not in that hospital.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, that's knocked the stuffing out of me. I got a tummy bug a couple of times, but it was like, you're sick for 1 or 2 days and then you're back.
Bad ass mofo, man. Well done. Should we go on to the next photo?
Sure.
Okay.
So the Africa, you could fill an hour.
Easily. And so the podcast kind of has to roll. And okay, bye guys. I mean, like, it's so funny too.
We might brush back on it later.
Sure, but yeah. like like for me just now, just from your story and from just thinking about it, like biking through Ethiopia into Sudan, where it's like crazy insane hot, and then I'm seeing on the photograph you guys are wearing polyester, it's gray, it looks kind of cold.
That last bit in Scotland is, it was like a vacation compared to Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely chalk and cheese.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's go. Scotland was the only country I didn't hitchhike.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Okay, next photo. Okay. You're a big softy. Okay.
I felt like they're a big part of my life.
Sure.
My children. So
okay.
It's not a particular photo. I just picked a recent one of them.
Nice. So it's made here in Hong Kong, I guess? It kind of looks Hong Kong-ish.
Yeah, that would be in Hong Kong.
So two girls are twins?
Yeah, so I've got twin girls going on 8 years old.
Nice. They're hilarious.
Yeah.
They're really, really fun. They're a little bit savage in a good way of putting it. I don't know, free range.
They're very energetic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, everything is fair game to climb.
Yeah.
So
when I say that, like, okay, word usage changes depending on where you're from. So, like, you know, like...
Well, yeah, they're not savage as in like
free range.
Barbarian, bloody savage.
No, they're two cute, sweet little girls.
Savage, like savage surfing wave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're badass. They're great. So they're standing there, and in a way, they're whether you think of it as consciously or not, they are reflections in them. There's either the obvious reflections or the subtle reflections in terms of their speech patterns, in terms of thought patterns, in terms of their behaviors. So from having been around them and been around you, I know that if they fall on the rocks by the beach, you're not going to helicopter in, most likely, with some heavy... you're pretty much like, okay, come on, sort yourself out. That was my impression.
I try not to pamper them too much.
Right.
Mother's always... got a different
sure.
tack on that a little bit, just maternal instinct, I guess, mm-hmm. as well. But I don't try to be rough or harsh or sort of totalitarian, but yeah, I don't want to wrap them up in cotton wool too much. No,
yeah.
No.
How much is your parenting influenced by your boarding school experience?
Not as much as I wish it could be. If I went full boarding school on them, then their mum would definitely be pissed. Yeah. When you asked me what my hardest mountain I climbed was, I thought for a split second about when I was 8 and a half going on... No, I was 8 and a half.
Okay.
I just started boarding school in Scotland. Never really done much hiking here. And they dragged us up Ben Nevis, the highest mountain in the UK.
Oh, wow.
We went up the main cattle path. It's not technical or hard by our standards now as adults, but you're starting at sea level and the mountain is over 1,300 meters tall. So it's more wild than what we made people cry on Lantau Peak doing easily. And we went up. There's still snow on the top in the spring. The weather's windy and volatile. But yeah, I got dragged up there and I did it. I remember chowing a lot of Lucozade. There was a diabetic kid on the hike with us. And I chowed all his glucose tablets.
No.
He still had some left, but every 10 minutes, I was like, can I have another one, please? I'm like, get me up. So they almost ate. If, 7 months from now, I drag them up Ben Nevis. I don't think it's going to happen somehow.
Okay.
And their mum would not
really?
Probably...
Okay. Well,
she would say it's too much.
Don't you think that inside our... Like, for example...
They're capable of it physically, even now.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's just it. It's like inside... it's all about like the your internal bar, right? So, for example, my daughter has always been dragged along to do hikes.
Yeah.
Right? So we did Lantau Peak at night. And I was just like a little kid, badass. Like, you know, she's climbing up. The wind was up. it's dark, you know, and she was, I think, 11 or 10. And yeah, and it was just like, so it's one of these things where in the parental brain, you have to kind of constantly recalibrate and constantly go, okay, I'm thinking of you when you're 7, whereas now you're 8. You know what I mean? Like,
but I feel like why not do that if a kid is physically capable? What, because sure, in terms of it being a risk assessment, there's no risk.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just taking them up a flat, not flat, but like a trail that's not got sheer cliffs either side.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's long and hard. Well, as long as you go with sufficient water and food and whatnot, the maternal instinct of the mother saying, no, that's too much, don't do it.
Right.
Like, well, what's the actual risk?
Right.
What harm can actually come of this, short and long term?
Right. Yeah. But so in my family, it's the exact flip. I'm the one who's like, maybe we shouldn't. And Delian's like, nah, she's fine.
Yeah, go for it. This is the time to do it. Take them up that mountain when they don't have maybe irrational fears and inhibitions. Because the people you've probably had them as adults.
Right. It's going to reflect that.
The root cause of that's probably a lack of proper exposure to things when they were kids.
Right. Do you have siblings?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not much to talk about.
No. Well, but it is interesting in terms of whether or not, like, it's not defining quality, but it is potentially an element to think about.
It makes you more independent.
Okay.
You got to learn to have your own fun as a kid.
Sure.
Because you can't play with your friends every day, even at boarding school.
Right, okay. So clearly an important part of your life. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're going to school on Hong Kong Island, which is a good... Like, how long of a commute is it from here when you guys go?
About 45-minute drive.
Okay.
In the mornings. If there's no traffic, you could do it in maybe half an hour or so.
Right, right. It's a commitment.
Yeah, so we're in the state of flux where we're doing this chat now as the property we own, and it's a bit far from the school they've started. So hopefully in the coming month, we can get a tenant in here and move out and move closer to where they go to school.
Right, right.
Yeah, they shape my life. They're a big part of it. They dictate a lot of the script.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
Do they ever participate in your adventure tours? In a sense,
No, the only time they've ever really been on a tour, funny enough, was with you.
Ah, okay.
Because the helper didn't show up.
Right.
But we got away with that because that particular day we weren't hiking anywhere. We were doing an event in a single location.
Sure.
No, they would like to come on a tour, and I would like for them to come on a tour.
Yeah.
But even if they could do it physically, there's still quite a high risk of them kind of distracting from my attention to the customer.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
The tour then becomes about them and not the customer.
Right.
And you don't know who these people are on a tour. You can have a dialogue with them, but until you meet them that day, they could be anyone.
Right.
And they could love kids or they could find the kids quite irritating.
Sure.
And then once you got that one-star TripAdvisor review, they're very hard to shake off. Normally, they'll never delete the reviews. So you're always walking that tightrope.
So
when they're older, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, yeah. No, sure.
Definitely. Yeah. I would love for them to be little tour guides.
Right.
There's a holiday job for pocket money or whatever.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That is very cool. Okay.
You were going to say something. I cut you off. Sorry.
Which one's your favorite?
Depends which day. Depends which
question.
No, but I'm going to answer it. It depends. I do have a favorite, and it fluctuates usually from day to day because they're twins, and they're yin and yang. When one starts being good, the other things will be difficult. It's when one starts having a bit of a shocker and is being difficult, the other will sense an opportunity I'm going to be the good twin. Give me the love and the attention. And that will stick usually for a day. So
I had no idea this was going to happen. Sorry, I was just being a shit. I'm really sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, if I was on the fence, I just wouldn't have answered that question. But I'll be honest, I do every day have a favorite. This depends.
Do you tell them?
You say you're being the difficult one today, aren't you? I'll be frank with them, and then they're frank back with me. Yeah.
I'm sure they're frank back with you.
But no, overall, of course not. No, you can't say.
That's awesome. Okay, so in terms of, before, when I met you, you had just come here from New Zealand. So why don't you talk about, because the tensions of running your business, of COVID, of the kids, like how did that all, because in a way, like life is about tensions and relieving pressures. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden you have this pressure, I have to move to Hong Kong. Or this pressure of, oh, we want to be in New Zealand. So how, why don't you talk about those tensions?
Okay. Well, it sucked to be in Hong Kong it sucked to be everywhere during COVID, right? But I would say the first year and a bit, as inconvenient as everything was, Hong Kong, we felt we were in a good part of the world relative to everywhere else.
Yep.
So you say, right, well, you know, we'll do what it takes. And then things started to change over the following year or two. COVID cases would pop up here every now and then, and there'd be, you know, snap, not lockdowns, but there'd be an increase of restaurant restrictions.
Sure.
But it was all relative to what was happening in the rest of the world. And it got to a point suddenly where nearly everywhere else in the world, except for mainland China and maybe Australia and New Zealand, was just going, opening up and just getting back to normal.
Yep.
And then here we are in Hong Kong, just still being stuck here.
Yeah.
Can't do this, can't do that. Yeah, my business was flat. The kids weren't going to school. So you're like, well, what the hell are we doing here? I think it's about trying to find an optimal arrangement for everyone and give ourselves the best life.
Right.
And once things opened up in the rest of the world, but Hong Kong hadn't, it was not as though there was any pathway to things getting normal here.
Sure.
Everything indicated that things were going to get worse here.
Yeah, and frozen. And just like, yeah.
If anything, cases were, Omicron was going to come out and be more invasive, and cases would go up and things would get worse. So we got an opportunity with New Zealand's quarantine lottery system. We got a spot. So we'll bugger it. Let's go to New Zealand. That would be a great life. My parents are there. We can just basically touch down and hit the ground running to some extent. The kids have New Zealand passports, so they can go to school for free.
Wow.
You can just do it.
Yeah.
Lyric didn't have New Zealand citizenship, so that was a bit of a faff. We had to get there and figure out her work visa and her job there. But yeah, we hit the ground, not hit the ground running, but we got settled down and it was all good. And for the first year and a half in New Zealand, New Zealand opens up subsequently, and everywhere in the world opens up.
Right.
China and Hong Kong do it, and things get worse here, and we're pretty smug.
Yeah.
But then eventually, this year, things have settled down in Hong Kong, and we've just been plodding about in New Zealand, sort of just in this little town where my parents live, thinking, well, what are we doing here long term?
Right.
So it was a slam dunk to leave Hong Kong, but it wasn't to come back. We were quite torn.
Right, got it.
Capitalism won, I'd say. We're back here for the money, for Lyric, my partner, for her job, and me running my business as much as anything. But the kids are in a good school. So if they're losing out, it's because they've made some friends in New Zealand who they're now not in touch with. And they're maybe not out as much with bare feet on grass stuff. They're 8 years old, 7 years old. They'll make new friends.
Hong Kong is a great place for kids.
It's very safe.
It's very And I think if they've got a parent or parents who value the outdoors like you do, like I do, it's a great place.
Yeah, and outside. You know, there's clubs you can be members of here that have facilities and things and amenities for kids. I mean, the school they're at now. There's a load of stuff in that school they don't get at primary schools in New Zealand.
Sure,
bigger budget. Got a 3D printer. I don't know. Right. All these little skills and utensils and little skills. So it's a more rounded education they're going to get now.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, so we're trying to just do the best for everyone.
Of course.
I don't know about tensions, but that's all what feeds into our decision making.
Right.
So it's trying to find what's best for everyone individually and collectively in the family.
Yeah. Okay, well then, let's go to the last photo. The last photo. It's
flying by.
It's flying by, man. Wait a second.
That looks familiar.
Okay, so it is a graphic of a very nice rendition of a map of the world that seems to have some raised in relief sections. So like the mountains aren't super, super raised, but you can sort of tell, like when I look at Canada, the Rocky Mountains are kind of raised. When I look here, well, the around India and all this stuff, it's just a mass of just mountain ranges. Yeah. And it's the world, it's a map of the world, different countries, different colors. So is this showing all the places you haven't been to or you have been to? Or like, why
is
are we
the
on
glass
this?
Half full or half empty? I don't know. It's, it's a political map with a little bit of topography on it, but... I went on Google search, just said world map.
Okay.
So that's the essence of it. It's a map of the world. And it's, I guess, quite nice this one came last because the context for this has already been laid the last three photos and talking about it. I love maps. I love exploring.
I love
and traveling. And
I love that you can talk about British Columbia with such authority and frames of reference and really because I lived in BC and I know about BC and I know, and then we're having a conversation about it, and then how many times have you been to BC?
Zero.
Big fat nothing. Big fat amazing.
I love maps, so I'm a geographer, and without having traveled to, I know a lot about places I've never been to and might never go to. But
how about Turkey?
I'd love to go there. Okay. I've only been to Istanbul Airport a few times.
Wicked.
Yeah, I can tell you a lot about mountains and places in Turkey that I probably a complete waste of my time knowing about. But
So let's rewind the tape somehow, because I have to share how it is that the cells in your brain and the experience and all this stuff. Because here, so let's just see. I'm looking at Africa. I'm looking at South Africa. Mm. And we can look at that, and most people can't say, oh, yeah. Like, some people might be able to say, oh, I've driven from this point to this point on a map, which will be very small. But in your case, you could say, I took my bicycle from that point at the tip of Africa in a sort of weird kind of line all the way up to there.
I would like to add more lines one day.
Sure.
The kids are a bit of a... Well, some people just keep on adventuring while they have young children. I mean, if they're making a living out of, doing big tours and then doing talks and things like that.
Right.
I would like to add some more lines, mm-hmm. if possible.
So one guy I had on the podcast, he's won all of these... Guinness Book of World Records, whatever. He's rode from from California to Asia in a rowboat, simply hand powered,
across the Bering Strait,
across the Pacific Ocean.
He just went trans-Pacific, open ocean.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's done other ones too. Like he's won like. Yeah, he's done this to raise awareness, but he's also done overland by bicycle. I can't remember specifically, but the one that stands out is that he rode a boat, like hand powered for months across the Pacific Ocean.
That's bloody nuts. I mean, because the ocean is merciless; it doesn't discriminate.
Sure, not like Sudan.
Maybe if you're a woman. Honestly, going across Africa as a bloke on your own, you're no sweat. If you're a woman,
you
probably want to go in a group.
You're going to sweat.
Yeah, you're going to get some stick from some dodgy guys a lot of the time. But it's not something worth talking about for too long. But I mean, to go across the ocean is mental. I've not done any... rowing. I've done a trans sort of semi-transoceanic sail. We sailed from Scotland once, across the North Atlantic up to Svalbard. Mm-hmm. It's this archipelago of islands 80 degrees north. So it adjoins the Arctic ice cap.
Wow.
And I had my head, the first week, up to an island called Jan Mayen. It's this volcano that just comes out of the North Atlantic. Yeah, it was a crew of about 20 or so.
Oh, wow.
On an 80-foot yacht. And we sailed past Iceland up to Jan Mayen. Sits sort of... The first week was just rough, rough, rough. Mm-hmm. We're beating into the waves. Force at 8. It was really bloody strong. And I just had my head in a bucket the whole week. It was miserable. No. I was basically seasick most of the sailing trip.
Oh, shit.
So I survived it, but that taught me pretty quickly.
You're not a sailor.
I am, but inland, inshore.
Got it. Wow.
Open passage. Yeah. Invariably, you're going to get swells at some point.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I didn't get my sea legs, and I'm never going to get them.
So looking at this map of the whole world, you've been to Australia, you've been to Africa, you've been to Asia. What place is...
I'm half Scottish, half Kiwi.
Okay.
In terms of where my family's from. And then I've grown up in Hong Kong. So,
yeah
Australasia, Southeast Asia, and Europe are pretty well frequented. I've spent pretty much all my time in those areas.
Sure.
Either based somewhere or traveling around.
Mm-hmm.
I had the Africa trip, so that was about five or 6 months on the bike across Africa. I had about a 3-month trip backpacking around South America and Cuba and Mexico.
Oh, wow.
So look, we've got all of Central Asia.
Right. I'm just trying to remember if and why this is in my head. Did you do a kayaking tour or something? Like a long distance kayaking?
Around Hong Kong. I did a few COVID-induced, what do we call them? Stay ventures. It's like a play on the term staycation.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't go on a plane anywhere. You wanted to do an epic hike in the Himalayas? Can't go there.
Right.
You wanted to go kayaking anywhere? Like, you can't. We're in this bubble.
Sure. Like, I'm trying to project myself into the brain of somebody who's like, fuck that, I'm never trying that ever. Like, in the sense of that there's something in you somewhere that lives in your cells that says, let's just do it. Let's just kind of, and so I've been with you out on, in a tour, on groups. You're not especially fast. You're not like racing. You're very kind of, you're always aware of the group. Sometimes you go ahead, you'll loop back. So there's also that supervisory, call it parental, sort of like, okay, I'm going to oversee the safety of the people. But for somebody to kind of tap into, like, why, you know, the classic is because it's there. But why? Like, why is that in you?
Taking groups out, it's pretty tedious having to babysit people and watch them. I mean, It's not that much fun, really. It's nice. It's a great job. Very grateful, right? Like, we're out in the outdoors. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's pretty tedious just trudging about. I'm not like a super ripped, lean, fast, fit. I'm not a fitness guy. I mean, I love a bit of a burger and coffee, whatever it may be. But that buys into my life philosophy. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Just do stuff. Just keep doing stuff. Don't wallow around. Doing the tours, it's fun, but I think because you're doing that most days with little groups, it does make you think, right, it's the big, when we've got a quiet spell with the business and I got a bit of time, let's do an epic adventure.
Right.
Something, because those are the ones you remember.
Yep.
You don't remember...
The usual, the mundane.
You don't remember going to Disneyland with kids or doing the Dragon's Back for the fifth time in a week with...
Hold on.
Singaporean people are nice, but they're very slow.
First of all, okay, just one more time so people know where to find you online.
Wildhongkong.com. That's the business website.
Nice.
Just search for Wild Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And other than a few obscure YouTube videos or bits of content from other people, it's predominantly we've got that term. We've got that covered online. Yeah.
So in terms of what people can expect, because most people associate Hong Kong with the city, because that's what sells, right? It's the economics, the big city, the restaurants, the shopping. So what are some of the things that people can experience in Hong Kong that would totally blow their minds? Which to you is boring because you do it every day.
Yeah.
But you have to remind yourself like, oh yeah, like kayaking with whales potentially, quite unusual, but a dolphin.
It's plausible.
Plausible. Okay. They're being very generous. Have you ever seen a barking deer from the water?
Not from the water. I've seen them on land.
The trail, right.
They're around the villages here. You hear them at night. You hear them.
Yep.
Don't see them. Yeah. They're nocturnal and very shy.
Yeah, extremely shy. But okay, so somebody who's like checking out your website goes, what can I do with these people?
You might think of Hong Kong as a city, but 70% of the land area here is undeveloped. It's not that it's not a city, but it's cultivated. It's just landscape. There's jungle, coastline, beaches, mountains, hills.
Mm-hmm.
It's raw and unexposed. And there's what, 170 or so islands here, most of which are uninhabited.
Oh, okay.
So there's a couple of little stats that just sort of put it out there this place generally is. If you look at it from above, it's mostly green.
Right.
The urban area is actually the minority of Hong Kong. So yeah, if you live here, that's all on your doorstep. And the climate's pretty warm. It's hot most of the year. So it's great for water sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can go to places with great landscapes, but if the water's bloody cold,
yeah,
it's not much fun to get in, even if you're gung-ho and want to.
Yeah.
But aside from typhoons, we don't get a lot of extreme weather or extreme wind. So most days, you can go out and do an activity.
Right.
So running it as a business, we can operate most days.
Right.
And as someone coming here to visit, you can pretty reliably come here on holiday for a week and have a portion of that week where you're going to be able to go out and do stuff.
Yeah, and get fit and do amazing. Okay, so what's the wildest thing that you've seen in your wild Hong Kong trip?
In wild Hong Kong? Whoa. It's called wild Hong Kong because we're sort of going outdoors and exploring things. But in terms of, what would you mean by wild?
Okay,
because it's quite a broad word.
Right. Let's say in terms of fauna, in terms of
wildlife.
Yeah, wildlife.
I think on land, I've never seen a pangolin or mongoose. I've not seen sea snakes. There's a lot of obscure stuff that it says in a book that it's in Hong Kong. Yeah. I've not really seen any of that. You just see a bunch of cool stuff, but it's not like
king cobras.
Yeah, you see different kinds of snakes or porcupines or monkeys or whatever. But your mind's because when you do it frequently, it's not like mind blown.
I know exactly.
It's noteworthy and it's special, but I wouldn't say that's the most wild thing I'll ever see. Sure. So, yeah, some of that really rare marine life was pretty cool.
Right. Rory Mackay is in the house, man. And look, this is, I think, it's been an hour.
That's it?
It's been an hour.
Damn.
That's all I can give you,
brother. That was good.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Cheers, bro.
We'll
give a handshake.
Okay, let's do it. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be on the chat, mate. Thank you. All right.
Tuning it raw?
Yes.